Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Culture is a difficult thing to examine. Part of it is because it's the ground under our feet, it's the air we breathe, it's the sky over our head, it's the wallpaper of our lives, and we often don't notice those things. They become so familiar to us that culture, like all of those things, is hard to examine. Now, Christians, by the way, I firmly believe, have a distinct advantage here because we are given a different perspective. We are given a perspective that comes from outside of whatever culture we live in, from outside our own narrow minds, from outside our own inability to perceive the dangers all around us, a divine perspective. In Holy Scripture, we're given that divine perspective and able to look at our culture and ourselves and see the dangers that really lurk there. One of them is this kind of creeping Gnosticism. It's part two of our five-part series on Gnosticism in 21st century America. Pastor Peter Burfein joins us for part two. He's pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Toledo, Ohio, and he's author of the book Gnostic America, a reading of contemporary American culture and religion according to Christianity's oldest heresy. Peter, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Ted.
Most of us are familiar as Christians, at least passingly familiar, perhaps, with the simple creed, the Apostles' Creed of Christianity, just a statement of the Christian faith in its bare bones. You have actually crafted, I believe, what you call a postmodern creed that helps us understand the influence of Gnosticism in American culture. What's the creed?
Yeah, I mean, this gets to the idea that everybody's got a faith at some level. Atheists have a faith. Everybody's got a faith somehow. And this is what I argue is the faith of modern and postmodern America that permeates throughout culture and society. And today's creed is basically this: I am a lone self, abandoned, thrown into this world, that happens to have the parents I have, that happens to be in the country that I'm in, that happens to be the church that I'm in. I grow up, and until about the age of, probably the teen years, but especially when you get off to college, is when I have to be my own person and make my own decisions and be yourself. That's the creed in a nutshell, be yourself. And part of that process means stripping off all these masks that supposedly have been imposed on me, all the things that the Section 3 of the Catechism talks about in the Table of Duties, your duty to family, church, state. All these things have to be stripped aside as you create who you want to be. You design yourself. You create yourself, or you paint yourself on your own blank canvas. And critical to this process is choice. This all goes back to Friedrich Nietzsche, who believed that we are value-choosing individuals who define who we're going to be. We have to be our own God. It's all the same self as God, refurbished for modern day.
How does that connect to Gnosticism's influence in culture, in postmodern culture?
Yeah, and this is one of the big discoveries I made as I was studying for the topic, and especially, like I said last week, sort of the question behind the question is, how do we deal with the challenge of creative worship, contemporary worship, and all these sort of attacks on the traditions of the church and the traditional liturgy? And one of the things I was investigating was this whole emphasis on self, basically dealing with this whole idea that we need to have another reformation for the self. And as I'm investigating the doctrines of the self, I came across existentialism, which really puts the development and the coming to being of the self as the center of its philosophy. And then as I'm studying existentialism, I came across the writings of Hans Jonas, who's a Gnostic scholar, and he kind of made the same discovery I made, is that as he was studying existentialism and Gnosticism, he recognized that they're both basically the exact same creed. And this whole idea that we're randomly thrown into the world, the realm that we're in, with the family we have, the country we have, the culture we live in, the church we're in, and part of the process of coming to being for yourself is to strip off all these masks from your being. And that is that's what I call the default creed of postmodernism. If to put it real succinctly, in the Christian creed is deny yourself and follow Christ, right? The ancient philosophical creed, you might say, is know thyself. You got to, study philosophy to be able to know yourself. Well, the postmodern creed or the modern creed would be yourself. Just be you, whatever that means. No right or wrong guiding what you are, just be yourself.
It is self-determination.
Yes, yes, exactly. You decide who you're going to be. Choice is, I hate to reference Rush Limbaugh, but he always talks about choice being the sacrament of the left wing. But I, from a different perspective, I'm seeing that choice has to be essential for the existential pursuit or for the postmodern creed. You have to be able to decide what and who you are going to be. If you don't have that choice, it's death. Whereas a Christian, it's a totally different thing. We are guided by external forms and external, doctrines and the Ten Commandments that guide our what it means to be human.
You write about, in this respect, the alchemical power of our media. What are you talking about there?
Oh man, this gets into a involved thing. As I was just making my notes for this, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is an involved thing. So basically, the way it begins with Darwin. Now, Darwin basically vacated the human soul, right? He said, we're all here, matter is all there is, we're evolved, and materialistic explanations can explain everything. So he ultimately prepared the way for saying, well, we don't need God anyways, which is what Nietzsche said. He said, God is dead. We don't need him anymore. So once we remove that lodestar, once we remove God as an external guidance for the development or the coming to being of the soul, what's going to guide us? Well, there's nothing to guide us anymore. You're a lone self. And once you strip off all these external things of family, church, state, and any sort of external arrangement of who you should be, you alone determine what you're going to be. Well, the problem is, and I use this analogy, it's like stripping off the layers of an onion. You strip off the external layer of your family, church, and state, and then you get to that core of an onion. Well, the problem is, there is no core to an onion. It's all those layers and layers that eventually you end have nothing. Well, that should be a moment of despair, but for some, that's a moment of wonderful, oh, we can create who I'm going to be. Well, what really happens is in the vacated soul, and this gets back to the teaching of Carl Jung, the psychoanalyst about 100 years ago. He was big. So he believed that, just like I said about the existentialist, the self is kind of trapped behind all these masks, and we got to free ourselves from this prison house of these external masks from family, church, and state that are imposed on us. But as we do that, he said, there's this thing called the collective unconscious, which is basically comes straight from Gnosticism. And it's this idea of this pre-existing unity that we once belonged to and is our eternal, it's our quest to reunite with, this collective unconscious. Well, the collective unconsciousness speaks to us through these things he called archetypes. These archetypes come to us and speak to us in our heart of hearts and help reveal aspects of our selves that are more true than the way we were brought up, for instance. And these archetypes, how do they reveal themselves to us? Well, he argued that they reveal themselves to us through our literature. And others took that and said, well, it reveals itself also through movies and music and all these other sort of elements that we would call pop media today. And if you think about it, that is kind of the role that pop media has had today. I came across one author, a movie critic, who was talking about the female trickster archetype in movies, and I just have to read a bit of what she is saying, because when I came across this, I was thinking, this is exactly what I was saying. But she said, movies can be modern-day myth-makers activating new archetypical images in the culture. Together, sitting in the dark, we can change our lives and update ancient mythology. Mythic figures like Aphrodite and Hermes are not simply characters, but psychic energies that come alive through the medium of film. archetypes on the big screen come alive in society as audiences take them home. And then she goes on to say how these archetypes can influence how we vote, how we act. It can literally change the constitution of who we are. Now, if you think about that, that's kind of terrifying because she's basically describing what an idol is. It's a psychic energy come to life through our own action. You know, and she even references these ancient gods. And you look at the history of music or modern music, and it wasn't just a fun, oh, let's do some rock and roll. The early rock and rollers, I have a Jimi Hendrix quote where he says, "We are trying to change the world. We are trying to change the constitution of people's brain cells, literally brain cells. And through that, we're hoping to change the world." He talks about an electronic Bible, meaning his guitar, that's going to replace the Bible. He said it. He's one of the prophets of the age we live in now. And you go anywhere today and you'll see music and movies and TV having far greater influence on people's lives and self-identity than the church does anymore.
And you say that this power, in your words, is undeniably spiritual, the power of the media.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even by their own self-definition, you know, when they're talking about archetypes and psychic energies coming to life, that's all related to the spirit big time. And we see it. I mean, we see, you know, I used to teach Latin at a local high school, and anytime, you know, the red flag was always if someone's grades went down, oh, is he doing drugs? Well, that wasn't the case anymore. After a while, I'd ask the parents, oh, his grades are going down, and I'd say, well, is he playing a lot of video games? Oh, yeah, we limit him to 3 hours a night, though. And I'm saying, no, that kind of stuff is the stuff that's the drug of our day. And people need to be aware of this stuff because it's literally changing the spiritual makeup of our minds. It's these psychic energies that are changing the architecture of our minds, and it's dangerous.
Pastor Peter Burfeind is our guest. We're talking about Gnosticism in American culture, part two of our series on the subject. He says that American culture is lovesick when it comes to Gnosticism. We'll find out what that means after the break.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Thank you for helping us make Budget and for more than 4 million downloads of Issues Etc. in 2016. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 9 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support of Issues Etc. live and on demand, and for our 24/7 talk and music stations. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2017.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington; Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas; St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska; Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina; St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland; Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas, St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado, and Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back. It's our series on Gnosticism in 21st Century America, Part 2. We're dealing with Gnosticism in American culture today. Pastor Peter Burfeind is our guest, author of the book Gnostic America. Peter, why do you refer to American culture as love sick when it comes to its, well, its love affair with Gnosticism?
Yeah, and again, Gnosticism is the unnamed religion. You know, we could never say, "Oh, this is the religion of Gnosticism," and this is, you know, how you think about it. It's what you identify as you see these things. And I mean, look at our country today, where depression is on the rise. Despite all the goodies we have, all the luxuries we have, you can go anywhere within 3 miles and have all the luxuries available to mankind. And yet, we're a highly depressed society. We're highly pathological and on many different levels. What is going on? Well, to me, I see it as sort of this is what I call a love sickness. And this actually goes back to it gets back to the Gnostic creation myth and their understanding of the cosmos. Again, it gets to this idea that we believe love involves neighbor. And love is a sacrificial self-giving to someone who is nearby you, whether it's your family or your next-door neighbor. Well, the only reason you have a neighbor is because you have a material distinction from the person standing next to you. You are separate from them, and we believe that's a foundationally good thing. God created the world with distinct beings, and flesh is how that individuality and distinctness manifests itself. Well, remember, Gnostics deny the validity of the creation. They deny the goodness of what materiality has brought into our world. They deplore that as the dividing up of everything and the bringing in of corruption. So for them, you're a trapped self, trapped in your body, and you're supposed to escape that. Well, there's no love for neighbor in that scenario, because neighbor is just as much of a cosmic mistake as you are. Well, rather, love is more an erotic thing. And I make that distinction between agape and eros. For the Gnostics, eros, or the erotic, has always kind of gone hand in hand with it, specifically non-procreative sexual acts. And throughout your history, you see this connected with Gnosticism. And what is really going on with that is that as yourself is trying to reconnect with the unity, the collective unconscious, whatever, there's a sort of a spokeswoman on behalf of the unity that appears to you and kind of grabs your hand and leads you out of this material world, and that's Sophia. That's the character Sophia that they reference. Well, Sophia manifests herself through these sort of archetypical situations. It's the divine woman, and she can manifest herself through another woman, through another man, even if you're a man, through yourself. You know, it's not about the object of your love. It's about really self-love masquerading itself as something external to you. And it all gets down to the erotic, the sexual. Sexuality minus procreation is really what it is. And why it's a love sickness is because this also characterizes Gnosticism throughout history as this kind of melancholy and this constant yearning to leave this world behind. And it's almost like a depressed state of, oh, I just need something to lift me out of this mundane world. And, oh, there's a woman or there's a whatever. And you fall in love with that thing. And that's going to be the thing that's going to give release to your prison house.
Where does music enter the picture? You talk about it being part of this. Well, now we're not just talking about culture. We're talking about cultus.
Yes.
Aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, oh man, this is a fun story too. I mean, we have such a blind understanding for music, and the church really needs to get on board with this. when we bring in all sorts of music just because, oh, it's all subjective. There's no objectivity to music. Nobody has ever thought that throughout history. Certainly not Plato or Aristotle, certainly not the early church fathers. The early church fathers literally spoke about their fear of feminized music. And they worried about music, and especially in their context, the playing of the flute was something that they believed would feminize people and eventually corrode the faith. And Plato and Aristotle, they talk about certain modes and melodies that can have an effect on the human soul. And this is something that you look at the history of music. Schopenhauer certainly understood this. Nietzsche understood it. Wagner had a huge understanding of this. A lot of his operas really work with some of these themes and using music to manipulate the psyche. Well, the 1950s rockers, and especially 1960s, they picked up on this theme, and they understood that music is what I call the sacrament of the postmodern religion. For a lot of people, music is their sacrament, the means by which they connect to God. And you might note that there's no body and blood in music. It's completely an abstracted type of medium. And if there's no body and blood there, we're not dealing with the Lord of the church. Same thing with all the images of the movies. They're two-dimensional. The body and blood is literally sucked out of the message or the medium. And to me, that's the sign of its danger.
So this finds its way, obviously, from culture into the church, where I think what you've just described with music as the sacrament by which people connect to the unity or the divine, in many, many Christian churches, music is the only, well, it's small s sacrament because they've rejected the biblical sacraments, and they really do believe that it is through this music and the experience of it that they connect to God. Talk about that
right. Briefly. Yeah, it's, and that's, I should have mentioned this in our last little segment. In the ancient church, or in the ancient world, there were these things called mystery religions. And the whole purpose of a mystery religion was to get you in harmony with the God, whatever God they were worshiping. And they would do this through these techniques, and prominent among them was the use of music. Like I said before, the flute was especially prominent in this, and Aristotle picked up on that. But what would happen is you'd get to these mystery cults, and there'd be a musician, a flutist, who would start whipping you up into a frenzy, and through this technique of dance and shaking around and whipping your head around, and they even use drugs and alcohol, but they would get you into this ecstatic state, and then that was the mystery. You'd have a vision of the mystery. And as I'm reading this stuff, I'm thinking, how is that different than a modern rock and roll concert? And then with horror, you go to a lot of the mega churches or some contemporary services, and you recognize that's what they're doing. In place of the altar, you have a band. In place of the pastor, you have the lead singer. And it's all about singing. It's all about whipping up the emotion and saying that this emotion is your connection to God. Right? And talk with a neighbor up the street, and he was defending his attendance at one of these churches. And he said, you know, I really believe music is a way that connects us to God. And it's just a theme you see time and time again in the literature. We understand the power of music. And when music is in a ministerial relationship to the word, that means it serves the word. It can be a beautiful thing. It is a part of the human creation. We don't become Gnostics and say music is all evil, but there needs to be discernment and judgment about what music is good and what the proper use of music is. For example, what the proper role of church music is.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, this really reorients the way that the Christian ought to view his culture. It's hardly neutral, certainly not benign.
Right. Yeah, I'm a big advocate of that, is we need to be discerning about what's going on around us. I mean, you know, you can't just trust that you can hand your child off to whatever media he's being connected to and say, well, that's just him being a kid. No, that stuff is prying them away from the church, as every bit of evidence is telling us. You got to be mindful of what they are plugging into their brain. I'm very strict on my kids' TV watching. I try to look for the subtleties. I point out things. Look at how they're presenting religion. Look how they're presenting male or female. Look what they're doing there. What does that tell you? People just need to be discerning. We are in the world, but not of the world. So we can't just escape, but we need to be discerning when we are in the world.
Pastor Peter Berfind is pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Toledo, Ohio. He's author of the book Gnostic America, a reading of contemporary American culture and religion according to Christianity's oldest heresy. You can find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Peter, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ted.
Terry Mattingly is with us next. We're going to talk about obituaries for journalist Nat Hentoff. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.